Dan bertemu kembali. Ini adalah masa peralihan untuk ekonomi hijau Asia Tenggara. Menurut laporan Bain & Company, pelbagai transformasi untuk menyakarbonkan ekonomi global telah menjadi lebih pantas pada 2021. Di peringkat Asia Tenggara, kerajaan, perniagaan dan pelabur telah meningkatkan langkah mereka. Namun negara di Asia Tenggara masih kekurangan langkah berani dan juga tindakan yang konkret untuk capai pelepasan sifar. Bain & Company lapor peluang ekonomi dalam mencapai pelepasan sifar adalah sebesar $1 trilion dengan 5 ke 6 juta pekerjaan dan pertumbuhan KDNK 6 ke 8%. Jadi apa peluang untuk Malaysia dan juga di manakah kekuatan kita dalam mengambil tindakan untuk capai pelepasan sifar? Kita bersama dengan rakan niaga dan juga pengarah bersama Pusat Inovasi Kelestarian Global Bain & Company, Dale Hardcastle, yang ketika ini berada di Singapura. Dale, thank you for joining us. Dale, one key takeaway from the report about Malaysia is that Malaysia can decarbonize its fuel industry while managing its natural capital more sustainably and promoting circularity. Tell us more about this and the key opportunities in building nature-based solutions and working with Malaysia's existing advantages.
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, it's important to remember that we're going to need many different sort of solutions to move to a lower carbon and greener world. There is no, you know, one silver bullet, and many things will be needed. But nature-based solutions are really a key opportunity for Malaysia to leverage its, you know, its opportunities to reduce its emissions, alongside other opportunities like regional sort of electricity grid connections, electric vehicles, and other things like, you know, carbon storage. And when we talk about nature-based solutions, we mean is preserving, you know, forests or restoring forests or peatlands or other things to benefit from the carbon that they're able to sort of capture. And nature's role in global climate mitigation is undeniable, especially as we sort of wait for the next few decades of technological innovation, such as new fuels like hydrogen and direct air capture, to mature. Globally, you know, nature-based solutions have the potential to mitigate, you know, upwards of a third of the emissions that need to be sort of reduced to keep us below a 2-degree pathway. And with over, you know, 14 gigatons of natural, you know, carbon stock in forests and peatlands, Malaysia has the second largest natural capital potential in Southeast Asia behind Indonesia. It is a global leader. You know, it has the second largest stock of, you know, peatlands and the third most, you know, potential for tropical ports, you know, credits, which could be, you know, worth well in excess of $1 billion. I think at the same time, there's also, you know, great momentum building across the region to not just develop these resources, but also build markets around them. We've seen the, you know, the recent launch of the carbon sort of exchange in Singapore, others being looked at in other
countries around the region. And that, I think, provides an interesting way to sort of connect, you know, capital to, you know, natural resources with sort of companies that are looking to sort of offset their hard to sort of emit carbon emissions and the like. So I think this provides a lot of, you know, interesting sort of potential for Malaysia. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's also important to do something about, you know, capturing these resources sort of today, because many of these are sort of disappearing sort of quickly. And if we don't sort of take action in the near term to do it, not only will we lose the potential carbon potential that is there, but also the economic sort of potential. Mm-hmm. But beyond just kind of nature, there's, I think, a lot of other things that, you know, offer sort of opportunities in sort of Malaysia. You know, one, you know, clearly there's opportunities for more sort of connection of the regional electricity grid, as countries in the region are starting to look sort of slowly, but I think increasingly, at how we might sort of, you know, balance sort of power across sort of different sort of countries and incentivize renewables investments. Malaysia, of course, also has, you know, great potential within the kind of electric vehicle sort of domain. You know, while Southeast Asia has been relatively slow in its development of EVs and sort of putting them to market so far, you know, ultimately the direction of where mobility is going is clear. It's just how long is it going to take us to get there? And given the fact that, you know, Malaysia has a lot of local sort of production, as well as produces many different sort of components for lithium-ion batteries, which are, of course, you know, critical in EVs everywhere, I think there's opportunity around that as well. And then lastly, you know, is perhaps around sort of, you know, carbon capture and sort of sequestration. You know, Malaysia's sort of pledged to not sort of introduce any sort of new coal-fired sort of power plants. And as, you know, companies like Petronas and Tenaga and others look for ways to sort of reduce and sort of capture some of the carbon that they're sort of producing, I think there's a lot of opportunities there. And of course, we see, you know, Petronas is making investments already in that area.
But Dale, in the 12th Malaysia Plan, PM Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob said that the country aims to be carbon neutral by 2050. Economic instruments such as carbon pricing and a carbon tax will be introduced to support this vision. According to your report, absolute annual emissions are projected to continue increasing until 2030. Tell us more about this, and will the targets set by the PM outline a better path towards a carbon neutral country?
Yes. Yeah, so the analysis and detailing that we did in the report shows that Malaysia's projected annual emissions in 2030, are projected to sort of increase on a kind of per capita sort of basis, and that was based on the submissions that Malaysia made, like all countries are doing today, to their national sort of commitments ahead of the COP26 climate sort of change event that's going to start later this month. So I think there is projected to be an absolute sort of increase. I mean, notably, we see the trend of increasing absolute emissions is observed across many of the Southeast Asian sort of countries, who are projected to see something in the order of 70% increase on sort of conditional basis or larger on an unconditional, compared to what we see in sort of 2018. So I think we're definitely sort of seeing a lot of sort of increases there and the like. But probably the most important step to sort of start to sort of address this and sort of begin to reduce emissions is to plan to sort of commit the country to sort of a net zero target, which includes not only sort of defining when a country is going to achieve net zero, but when it sort of seeks to sort of have emissions peak and start to sort of reduce. And Malaysia's carbon neutrality sort of aspiration, I think, is definitely a positive sort of step in that direction. And if we had sort of 2 weeks more before the report was published, we would have been able to include it. But I think the key question now is, it's great that we see this sort of commitment to sort of move in that sort of direction. But of course, the devil is in the details on how we sort of translate an aspiration into actual action and be able to move us in that sort of direction. I think there's a number of different things that the government and others are sort of considering around doing that. And of course, one of the elements that has been talked about is the possibility of carbon pricing and beginning to put a price on carbon for different sort of industries with either taxes or sort of trading schemes that could help to sort of enable that. I think ultimately at the end of the day, pricing in the externalities of carbon emissions and incentives to do that is going to be sort of more and more important. Particularly as we see other sort of countries like Europe or the US or other places are considering potential import taxes on countries who export products from very high carbon emitting sort of regimes into there where things are sort of more strict, which is really about fairness and making sure that all companies are operating on a lower playing field. But I think the degree to which Malaysia and other countries in the region can begin to start to sort of train companies to think about this as a cost and start to shape behaviors moves us in the right direction.
But Dale, 2050 is still about 30 years away. What about other countries in Southeast Asia? Do they have shorter timelines and immediate actionable measures? What best practices can Malaysia learn from countries in this region?
A great question. And I mean, I think you definitely rightly sort of allude to the fact that there is a lot of difference across the region in many different countries and in different situations. But I think what has been very positive is if we look at the trends over the last year, we can see that many Southeast Asia countries have begun to sort of mobilize. Some have sort of set net zero targets already and are beginning to sort of change. For instance, Indonesia and Laos have committed to net zero targets by 2050 and 2060, and Thailand is looking for carbon sort of neutrality. So, if Malaysia is able to sort of achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, it would be one of the earliest in the regions. But if we look, just beyond the targets, we see a number of other things that are very sort of positive that's happening, within the region. First, we've seen a significant sort of shift and strong commitment away from using sort of coal and power generation. Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam have all sort of proposed, moratoriums on using coal with different sort of timelines so that no new power plants are being, built. Malaysia is also, poised to phase out sort of coal as part of its recent, 12th Malaysia plan. Second, as I alluded to a moment ago, we've also seen kind of more interest in sort of carbon pricing with, Indonesia and Singapore having already introduced, carbon taxes and are looking to sort of potentially sort of increase them. Vietnam looking to put in place a legal sort of trading scheme for sort of emissions, and other countries also doing sort of different things. And I believe that, you know, the Malaysia cabinet has already also agreed in principle to some of the proposals to look at, you know, different sort of ideas in the country, which is an extremely sort of positive step forward. The third thing that we see is, you know, countries are also beginning to think more critically about some of those natural resources that I mentioned, and how can we begin to sort of, you know, value them sort of more. Because I think, you know, one of the things that I think is little sort of appreciated is that, you know, just the change of land use from, you know, nature or forest or other sort of land use loss is a huge, you know, portion of Southeast Asia and Malaysia's, you know, emissions sort of overall, and that it's, you know, unable to any country to go forward and be sort of net zero if we don't, you know, do something about this.
And Dale, briefly before we end the interview, green investments in Malaysia have fallen since 2016, while sustainable public funds, AUM, has grown steadily. Investments in the other assets, asset categories are declining and small compared to the GDP. Why is this happening and what percentage compared to the GDP would be ideal? Briefly, Dale.
Sure, great. I mean, this is obviously a very sort of important area as we see, you know, a global arms race, you know, breaking out between many different countries around the world and significant investments in, you know, the US and China and Europe to sort of incentivize these industries. I think the green investment scene has been challenged by two things in Malaysia, you know, last year. Of course, you know, overall there was a decline in, you know, investments due to sort of COVID, where foreign direct investment, you know, fell by about, you know, 40%. You know, from the levels that we saw in sort of 2019, just given all of the other sort of uncertainty. That's a little bit sort of larger, but relatively sort of on par with the 31% that we saw across Southeast Asia overall. The second issue is, you know, Malaysia's, you know, green investment scene is still nascent and sort of just beginning, I think, to sort of grow and take off. We are seeing, you know, some sort of new sort of startups and other things being sort of, you know, coming into a sort of a fore, but clearly there's a need for, you know, more opportunities to potentially, you know, sort of stimulate those sort of new investments, particularly across, you know, I think a number of different areas where there are different sort of sectors that would be good.
No, thank you.
I think the positive is, to maybe close, is that if we look at the region overall, there is sort of slow but sort of steadily sort of increasing investment, whether we look at sort of green finance or private equity or venture capital or other things. So regionally, there is a lot of capital that are looking for opportunities, be that in sort of Singapore, Indonesia, or Malaysia. And if the right sort of incentives, I think, can be put in place, this can, you know, really help the sector to take off. And I would expect that will be part and parcel with some of what the government is sort of planning with its new initiatives.
And anyway, thank you very much, Dale Hardcastle, rakan niaga dan pengarah bersama Pusat Inovasi Kelestarian Global Bain & Company, membincangkan berkenaan dengan pelaburan dalam ekonomi hijau dan juga peluang yang akan dibawakan oleh pelaburan ini. Kita akan berhenti berehat sekali lagi kembali selepas ini.